You're not going to teach a criminal not to be a criminal. A criminal is a criminal, and they generally stay a criminal, and we don't have time to figure it out. Mm. And then their campaign says, I'm the prosecutor, and he is the convicted felon.
I'm Kamala Harris, and I approve this message.
Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles. This is the Bradcast. That's heard on KPFK, 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 in Santa Barbara, 93.7 in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding, you all got a big fire up there. Please be careful on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU. In Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, and Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth, I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, and muckraker. An all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us. I mentioned that that fire up north, it is a bad one. It's being referred to as the Park Fire, Desi Doyen. It is now the sixth largest, do I have that right? The sixth largest fire in state history at this point?
Yeah, it exploded in size over the weekend. It doubled in size over the weekend, and so it's huge. It's hard to really grasp how big it is. It's about 560 square miles of forest that have been burned through already. That's larger than the size of Los Angeles. So it's currently the largest fire burning in, for now, the United States. And so, yeah, it's bad.
It is bad, and it's threatening the Lassen. What is that?
Lassen Volcanic National Park,
right?
Has been closed, and there have been about 25,000 people who have been evacuated across the several different counties surrounding that area.
It was started by arson, apparently, a guy who lit his car on fire in a park. But it has now grown to more than 350,000 square acres. As it is fueled by very dry conditions.
Exactly. Now, yeah. You know, yes, it was sparked by an apparent arson. The suspect is in custody, but it is really important to make sure that people realize that, you know, we've had these record-shattering early season heat waves this summer that came in much faster and dried out forests and priming them for fire. So human-caused climate change is greatly increasing the number of days that have these extreme weather conditions that make fires, more frequent, and especially these mega fires like the Park Fire, that greater intensity, greater duration, harder to fight. So,
and it's freaking a lot of people out because a lot of people nearby are near the Paradise Fire, if I recall, and that, you know, which was just unbelievably horrific and tragic. And so I know it's triggering a lot of PTSD. So be careful up there in Redding,
please.
and environs up there. We are now less than 100 days away now from the next presidential election here in the U.S. And by the way, All of these stories that we talk about with Desi Doyen on our Green News Report, all of them are affected by this next presidential election. And Donald Trump's promise to basically roll back, reverse all of the climate initiatives that our current president, Joe Biden, has taken, and even turn back more than that. Basically, they want to turn back the 20th century is their plan. In any event, given the extraordinary past week with Joe Biden dropping out of the running, tossing his endorsement to his vice president, Kamala Harris, who has quickly received nearly universal support from party leaders, left-leaning organizations, labor unions, voters via some $200 million in donations to her campaign, over just the past week, $200 million. Well, I suspect there are listeners out there with a lot of thoughts who may not have been able to get through to us on the show when we've opened up the phone lines over the past several weeks as the phone lines were full. So I want to try to give you an opportunity to do so again today if you like. Our phone number will be 818-985-5735. Actually, that's what it is right now, 818-985-5735. If you'd like to line up to join the show in a little bit, if you are in our live Southern California listening area or listening from anywhere across the country and the world via the kpfk.org web stream, would love your thoughts on the Harris campaign and or her performance over the past week since she has stepped up to presumptively become the party's nominee for the top of the ticket before an early online roll call vote takes place among party delegates beginning as soon as August 1 of this week and apparently no later than August 7, all in advance of the Democratic National Convention that will take place in mid-August. Or if you'd like to call in on related matters, such as you would like to see or not see her naming for her vice presidential running mate, I'd love to hear from you on that as well. A choice that will also need to be made no later than August 7th, as I understand it. And it could come as early as this week. So if you want to do that, line up now, as I'd love to hear from you, particularly if you haven't been able to get through in recent weeks. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. But I got a number of, let's say, related-ish news items to try and get through first today, including the note that voters in Arizona are heading to the polls on Tuesday for their statewide congressional primaries, with much of the action happening on the Republican side, including failed 2022 gubernatorial candidate and election denier Carrie Lake, hoping to secure her party's nomination for the U.S. Senate to run against the Democratic Congressman Ruben Gallego, who is running unopposed on the Democratic side to fill the seat being vacated, finally, by former Democrat turned independent, and we're being nice here, Kyrsten Sinema. Senator Kyrsten Sinema, she's decided she would not be able to win her own party's nomination this year after voting against much of Joe Biden and the Democrats' agenda since 2020. Tuesday's race in Arizona, however, is a good chance for voters in the state to get out and to make sure they are registered to vote as they think they are before running into any surprises this November, which we do not need. This Thursday, August 1, voters in Tennessee will have a similar opportunity as the state holds its own congressional primaries there. And next week, August 6, voters in Kansas, Michigan, Missouri, and Washington State will all be heading to the polls as well. If you're a resident in one of those states, I hope you will get out and vote. We'll get back to our own elections here in the U.S. in a moment. But we are watching. Actually, before I go to our elections, we've got a caller, Sally, on the park fire up that we were just talking about there. Let me see if I can get some thoughts real quickly from Sally in Sherman Oaks. Welcome to the broadcast, Sally.
Hi. Thanks a lot. I would like people to get the book Paradise Lost. It explains how the Paradise Fires were started.
Having a little trouble understanding you, Sally. Are you on a speakerphone? Can you go to the handset by any chance?
I don't have a headset. I'm sorry. I'm on a cell phone. I'm inside my car.
Oh, you're driving. Okay. So, yeah, very quickly, what were we trying to try again?
Get the book Paradise Lost. It's very inexpensive.
Ah.
You can order it on Amazon. These fires are being started by direct energy weapons. There are too many in patterns that indicate there's something else afoot.
Okay.
And
thank you, Sally. I would say... just to respond to that real quick, she said Paradise Lost, get the book Paradise Lost, and then she referred to direct energy weapons starting these fires. Actually, it is not direct energy weapons. It's a guy who was at a park who actually lit his car on fire and rolled it over a ravine,
and the reason why the park fire took off and exploded in size to being the sixth largest wildfire in California history in less than a week is because of climate change. Yeah, that's an energy weapon called fossil fuels has warmed the climate. And because
Indeed.
We have a warmer climate, we have earlier, more fierce, more frequent, and more intense heat waves that then dry out the forest and turn it into a tinderbox when it waits for an arsonist to throw his car on fire down a ravine.
Yeah, and so if you really want to make friends with Desi Doyen, try to tell us it's a direct energy weapon that is starting these fires instead of climate change, thanks to man-made burning of fossil fuels and so forth. Anyway, back to our story so far. And as I said, we'll get back to our own elections. But we're watching very closely the developments today in Venezuela at this hour. Late on Sunday night, Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro was declared the winner by his own National Election Council, which is heavily stacked with Maduro loyalists. In a presidential vote that was held on Sunday that both opposition leaders and a number of nations and observers from around the world are describing today as marred by irregularities. Now, Venezuelans vote on electronic touchscreen voting systems, which print a paper copy of their vote. Hopefully it prints it out correctly. And they're supposed to deposit that into a box before leaving the polling place. But there have been reports that some government officials have in the past coerced voters into taking that paper with them when leaving the polls to demonstrate their loyalty. But as far as I can tell, results are tallied not from those pieces of paper, but from the electronic vote count of the computers, as opposed to those pieces of paper printed out by the voting systems. Those tallies, however, are supposed to be published at each voting site at the end of the election. Officials at some polling places, however, refused to release the paper tallies of the electronic vote count, and there were widespread reports of fraud and voter intimidation, according to several media outlets today. The government's announcement that Maduro had beaten his opponent, Edmundo Gonzalez, by 7 percentage points. Gonzalez had been a last-minute replacement after the leading opposition party's leader, Maria Corina Machado, had been disqualified from running by the Maduro government, while Gonzalez served as her replacement of a sort for voters. The results announced by the government-controlled Electoral Council varied wildly by up to 30 percentage points, reportedly, from most public polls and from the opposition's sample of results obtained directly from voting centers. And there were reportedly many reports of major irregularities, problems at those voting centers, some of which stayed open for an extra 6 hours after polling was supposed to have ended. Many voting sites had just one voting machine that led to hours-long lines. Many voters arrived nonetheless to stand on those lines before dawn, hoping to remove Maduro after his one-party government has resulted in just huge migration out of the country. Hundreds of thousands of people, many of them ending up here in the U.S., by the way. I've seen some reports that the results were in opposition. The reported results were in opposition to exit polling showing Gonzalez winning, though I would be skeptical of those reports as well. The veracity of those polls for the moment, since exit polling has also been banned by the Maduro government, reportedly. So that in and of itself is not an encouraging sign for the integrity of this election when you start banning exit polls. At the same time, the Maduro government has been opposed by the U.S. and by many other countries in the Americas and in the EU and even a number of its neighboring countries. So I am similarly skeptical for the moment about claims by those entities who have long opposed Maduro. The best way to oversee an election is to oversee the election, to have the public oversee an election. The opposition leader, Maria Corina Machado, who spearheaded Gonzalez's campaign on Monday morning, she called the results, quote, impossible. That would be the reported results from the Maduro government. Some opposition supporters could take to the streets to protest the results. That could plunge Venezuela into a new period of political unrest, like we've seen a number of times in recent years, when security forces aligned with Maduro ended up using deadly force to crush demonstrations. After officials from several countries in the Americas, including the U.S., expressed doubts about the announced results, it raised the likelihood that a new term for Mr. Maduro would not be widely recognized abroad. After a campaign marked by intensifying efforts by Maduro's allies to rein in the opposition, including arrests of opposition campaign workers, intimidation, vote suppression, well, the opposition bet heavily on an effort to have supporters on hand at the polling places to get physical printouts of the voting tally from every voting machine after the polls closed. Smart. That access is apparently allowed by Venezuelan election law, but by early Monday morning, Gonzalez's campaign said that it had obtained only 40% of those tallies. In some places, monitors were barred from entering polling places or never appeared in the first place. Often, election officials simply refused to hand over the tallies. And so that is all going to complicate the efforts by the opposition to prove undeniably that the vote had, in fact, been tampered with. The U.S.-based Carter Center in Atlanta is calling on Venezuelan authorities to immediately publish the tallies of some 30,000 individual voting machines from Sunday's disputed election. The center sent a small group to Venezuela to observe and monitor the election, as they do. It said that the missing polling station data is, quote, critical to our assessment and important for all Venezuelans. Gonzalez said Venezuelans and the entire world know what happened. The opposition vowed it would defend its votes, but Gonzalez and his allies asked supporters to remain calm and called on the government to avoid stoking conflict. Maduro accused unidentified foreign enemies of trying to hack the voting system. I guess that would be us. I guess we would be the foreign enemies. In fact, in this country, I should note, transparency and the ability of the public to oversee their own election results in Venezuela as well is absolutely key. That's how you do it. Transparency and oversight. And while public oversight of elections here in the U.S., particularly of electronically based voting systems, like the touchscreen voting systems that are still used by voters in about a fifth of the country, and for example, at all of the polling places across the entire battleground state of Georgia, despite years of opposition to those systems, yes, it is far from perfect here as well. Absolutely. But in comparison to what little information and evidence is currently being offered by officials, at least as of today in Venezuela, there is a huge difference in the amount of public oversight that we have in our own elections as compared to Venezuela's. At least compared to Venezuela's election on Sunday. And that is why claims by Trump and his supporters that he won the 2020 election were so unconvincing. Because we actually release a lot of publicly overseeable evidence here. And despite the huge amount of information that is available in our decentralized election and voting systems here in the U.S., and that is also very different from the centralized system in Venezuela, Despite that, the Trumpers have, with all that information, the Trumpers have never been able to show any evidence, any of any kind, to demonstrate there was widespread fraud back in 2020 that might have changed the results in any of the several states that they lost to Joe Biden in 2020 that would have, you know, that they would have had to have flipped in order for Trump to reach the 270 electoral votes needed to win that election. In any event, we will keep our eyes on the situation in Venezuela in the days ahead to see if we may be able to learn more either way. Meanwhile, here at home, as noted, it has been a wild ride, to say the least, over the past week. And, of course, the three or so that preceded it, since the whirlwind of political activities, beginning with Joe Biden's disastrous debate against Donald Trump, the assassination attempt against the former president, his announcement of Ohio Senator J.D. Vance as his running mate, his weird Republican National Convention, followed by the announcement that President Biden had tested positive again for COVID, then a corrupt Trump-appointed federal judge in Florida tossed out, for now, Trump's federal indictment on 40 criminal felony charges for having stolen highly classified national security documents upon leaving office and then refusing to return them to the government. And then, of course, after all of that, Biden's eventual decision to drop out of the presidential race and endorse Kamala Harris to take his place at the top of the ticket. And you can still hear the nation breathing a sigh of relief. Over the weekend, a related very short Twitter thread from lawyer, writer, and self-described democracy advocate Daniel Miller caught my eye. And I'd kind of like to share it with you and then get your thoughts on it in a little bit at 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. So Dan Miller writes, quote, these last couple weeks have been extraordinary. I've gone from envisioning the worst possible futures for my country to believing in the best possible ones. I've gone from feeling dread to feeling the kind of hope I felt in 2008. And yeah, I will note here, as I think I did last week following Biden's endorsement of Harris, that I have not seen Democrats in general so elated and coming together in what suffices for unison among Democrats since 2008 either, with the nomination of Barack Obama. But even then, there was a huge divide among Democrats that people, I think, would like to forget following the long and bruising primary between him and Hillary Clinton. At the time, it left a lot of resentment and fears that America was not ready to elect a black man as president. So I am seeing even more unity now behind Kamala Harris than I was seeing for Barack Obama back in 2008, in truth. In any event, back to Dan Miller, he writes, I feel relieved. But it's more than that, he says. It's as if Joe Biden was passing the torch to Kamala Harris in the way that he did, opened up a door into a different dimension, to a different version of our country, one that we had forgotten existed or doubted still did. He notes, we still have a lot of work to do, even if we beat Trump, he writes, but we've gone from just trying to hang on to our country to imagining a future for America with limitless opportunity where anything is possible. Converting all of our fear and doubt and anger into hope and optimism for the future isn't just about Biden's selfless act, although that's a big part. Miller argues, I mean, who would have thought politicians were capable of that kind of selflessness anymore? But it's also about who he passed the torch to. He argues Kamala Harris is the best of our country. How can you look at her career, her service, her family, and her story and not believe in America? Biden and Harris have somehow flipped the script on our country, he writes, but they can only take us so far. It's time for all of us to step up. Now, you may or may not agree with Miller there. And by the way, if you do or do not, I would love to hear from you as to why. Perhaps even more so if you do not, 818-985-5735 to explain why. But what jumped out at me was how quickly so many folks, including myself in many ways, have gone from, you know, sort of making plans for the end of America to in like less than 24 hours, looking ahead to a potentially hopeful and progressive future again for the first time in Lord knows how many years. From a world where abortions are banned, you know, just ask the folks in Iowa today, where there a 6-week ban on abortion has just kicked in. A 6-week ban before many women even know that they are pregnant. That just kicked in today. So from a world where abortions are banned, to banning books, to banning environmental regulations, to banning marrying those that you love, to making it harder, if not impossible, to vote, to so much more that so many of us have been thinking about in recent months as we've been, you know, looking towards Trump rising in the polls against then presumptive candidate Joe Biden. And the things that he's been calling for, as detailed in the Republicans' Project 2025 900-page manifesto, looking at the possibility of a world where all of those things that we have fought for so many years in this country would be just taken away. On one day, we're looking at that, and then we're seeing the possibility of freedom. And the expansion of rights and the expansion of health care and the expansion of social safety nets and of union wages and of so much more that suddenly feels to me like it just became possible again. In one sense, all of this speaks to a brittleness of our nation, that we are at such a wildly divergent crossroads here where things could go either, you know, one way or the other, one that includes the end of America as we know it on one side, and towards a whole new world of possibilities, finally, on the other. Now, that sort of instability, the fact that it's so easy to go from one to the other, depending on who becomes president, well, that's probably not a good thing. And hopefully that's a lesson that we have learned, or that we are learning, from the past 4 or 8 years. But if the nation goes in the direction of democracy and freedom and rights again, as Kamala Harris is now promising in her stump speeches, and moves away from the threat of autocracy and fascism, as promised, yes, by Donald Trump in his stump speeches, well, then maybe, just maybe, we can actually do something about the instability and the brittleness that has revealed itself more than ever in our system over the past 8 years or so in this country. We're not going to solve everything overnight. We've had 4 years of the most progressive president, certainly from my lifetime, probably going back decades. And yet it's not going to be solved overnight. But we have a chance to work towards that end. Well, working towards that end, President Biden did exactly that on Monday, as he finally vowed to do last week during his primetime Oval Office address, explaining why he was dropping out of the race, when he vowed, I think for the first time, to begin a real push for real reform of our corrupted, packed, stolen, activist, right-wing U.S. Supreme Court. On Monday, President Joe Biden, first in an op-ed in the Washington Post, and then in remarks made later in the day, unveiled a long-awaited proposal for changes, finally, at the U.S. Supreme Court, calling on Congress to establish term limits and an enforceable ethics code for the court's 9 justices. He also is pressing lawmakers to ratify a constitutional amendment limiting presidential immunity that, following the court's ridiculous, corrupt ruling just about 1 month ago, finding an all-new imaginary clause in the U.S. Constitution that nobody noticed before, offering criminal immunity from virtually all crimes performed by a sitting president while in office. That, in plain opposition to the founders of this nation, of this Constitution, who clearly wrote that document to ensure that presidents would not be kings and would not be immune
for criminal acts that were taken while in office. The White House on Monday detailed the contours of Biden's court proposal, one that appears, however, to have little chance of being approved by a closely divided Congress with just 99 days to go before Election Day. As we go to air, the president, I believe, has just finished speaking about this proposal at the LBJ Presidential Library in Austin, Texas, where he's speaking to mark the 60th anniversary of passage of the landmark Civil Rights Act, which is now threatened in a number of ways by our current corrupt right-wing court. Despite the ability to pass such a measure right now, however, Democrats, as AP reports this afternoon, hope that it will focus voters as they consider their choices in a tight election. The likely Democratic nominee, Vice President Kamala Harris, who has sought to frame her race against Republican ex-President Donald Trump as, quote, a choice between freedom and chaos, quickly endorsed the Biden proposal, adding that these changes are needed because, quote, there is a clear crisis of confidence facing the Supreme Court. Well, I will say so. Yeah. As Biden argued in his op-ed in the Washington Post on Monday, quote, I have great respect for our institutions and separations of power. What is happening now is not normal, he said, and it undermines the public's confidence in the court's decisions, including those impacting personal freedoms. We now stand in a breach, he wrote. Harris, in a statement, said the reforms being proposed, quote, will help restore confidence in the court, strengthen our democracy, and ensure no one is above the law. Biden is calling for doing away with lifetime appointments to the court. Sounds good to me. He says Congress should pass legislation to establish a system in which every sitting president would appoint a justice every 2 years to spend a term-limited 18 years in service on the court. So you serve for 18 years, and every president, every 2 years, gets to appoint someone new to the court. Biden argues the term limits would help ensure that court membership changes with regularity and adds predictability to the nomination process. He also wants Congress to pass legislation establishing a code of ethics that would require justices to do things like disclose gifts, to refrain from public political activity, to recuse themselves from cases in which they or their spouses have financial or other conflicts of interest. That, on the heels of a year or more at this point of stunning revelations about some of the court justices, mostly Clarence Thomas, but others as well, taking millions of dollars of undisclosed luxury gifts and vacations from political supporters and those with business before the court, and the refusal by Chief Justice John Roberts to implement a mandatory code of ethics in response and enforcement of that code of ethics. But Biden is also calling on Congress to pass a constitutional amendment that would reverse this Supreme Court's recent landmark so-called immunity ruling for presidents that determined former presidents have broad immunity from pretty much any and all prosecution. We'll talk about Biden's proposal more, I suspect, in the future. Unfortunately, it does not currently call for an expansion of the court to counter its packing by Republicans during the Trump years. We'll talk more about it in the days ahead. But I just want to cite that as a reminder to those hoping for better days ahead, even for those who might not be happy with Joe Biden, progressives, folks on the left who might not be happy with Joe Biden for whatever reason, and may similarly not be happy with Kamala Harris. The idea is we are pushing towards a more progressive future, a more perfect union, a path towards all of that. That path is the choice that we must all make this November between the progressivism toward a better world and that more perfect union that democracy brings, or the repression and the death of freedom and rights that autocracy brings. There's a world of difference and possibility depending on how things go in November. And a world of hurt for generations is on the ballot as well. That's our choice. Now, I realize that some may have problems or concerns with Kamala Harris this year, just as they did with Joe Biden, just as they did, by the way, back, what was it, 12 years ago with Barack Obama. But as Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez observed a few months ago in response when she was asked about her support for Joe Biden's then reelection hopes earlier this year, despite clearly disagreeing with him on several points, most notably the administration's Israel policy, AOC made clear that she would rather, if that's the choice, she would rather organize against a Biden administration, or now I should think a Harris administration, than against a Donald Trump administration.
This election is more, in my personal view, I believe this election is about more than the president. And also, it's not just one election that's happening. We're having hundreds of elections.
Yes.
The balance of Congress, the balance of the House, the balance of the Senate, and the presidency. And I have a vested interest in protecting democracy, not just here domestically, but globally. And it isn't, I truly do not believe this is as a lesser of two evils type of situation. I think about what conditions do I want to be organizing under in the next 4 years.
Yeah.
We can look at both of these individuals oppositionally as well, depending on what issue you have. But I would rather, even in places of stark disagreement, I would rather be organizing under the conditions of Biden as an opponent on an issue,
yeah,
than Trump, who is not... He seeks to dismantle American democracy. And I am taking that personally very seriously.
Yes.
Because we will not be able to organize for any movement towards anything if we are facing the jailing of dissidents. I mean, this is the kind of authoritarianism,
yes,
that he threatens.
Fascism.
And we have to take it seriously.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. Who would you rather organize against? Who would you rather try to move to your side of the aisle? Donald Trump or Kamala Harris? To that end, let me take a break here. And I do want to get, if time, to some encouraging polling numbers coming in late on Sunday, although I see our phone lines are filling up. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK to discuss, well, any or all of the above, or really anything else. Have you found hope again over the past week or so? Are you still feeling unsettled by all of the madness? And while we're at it, I guess we can, as usual, at least until Kamala Harris makes her pick, we can play. I'm willing to play Veep Stakes again today in advance of what is likely a vice presidential announcement, perhaps as soon as the end of this week. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. Quick break. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
Hi, this is Desi Doyen from the Green News Report and The Bradcast. What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
One could end up going to prison. One just might be president.
Maybe. Welcome back to Bradcast.com. Could you hear me all right? Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. 818-985-KPFK is our phone number. 818-985-5735. Lots to talk to you about today. If you'd like to ring in on Still stunning news about Kamala Harris looking like she is going to be the presumptive nominee for the Democratic Party. Thoughts on that? Thoughts on her vice president? Who would you like to see her choose for vice president? Who would you not like to see her choose for vice president? I'll take those calls. I'll take all of that as well. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Hal in Huntington Beach. Hey, Hal, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hello, yes. Just as an admin note, the volume on your phone line is way low. Secondly,
yeah, sorry.
Clinton once said, is the economy stupid? And that's great that, you know, we can win this election now. But, you know, next year when the we try to raise taxes on the rich and the corporations.
You mean when we let the taxes expire, the tax cuts expire on the rich and the corporations that the Trump tax cuts, when we let those, hopefully let them expire. Is that what you mean?
Well, hopefully. But we're going to have to raise taxes, too. And cut spending, because our national debt is over $1 trillion.
Yeah.
And that's more than our GDP. We spend almost $1 trillion on defense a year.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, even the Fed chair said this is unsustainable.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, once the euphoria has worn off and we go into next year, if we win, they better have a plan to rebuild
the manufacturing
base.
Well, here's a plan. Hey, let me respond to you,
get
Hal.
All these jobs, Hal, that they shipped overseas.
Hal, you might have trouble hearing me. I'm not sure. You might be listening from the 1990s. But for the last 4 years, in fact, there has been a plan put in place to bring the manufacturing base back to the U.S. There has been a boom in manufacturing jobs here in the U.S. thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, thanks to the Bipartisan Infrastructure Act, the CHIPS Act. There is a plan for that because it is happening. Moreover, if you're actually concerned about the deficit and the debt, then I'm sure you will be happy to let the tax cuts expire next year, correct?
Well, yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
But you're going to have to get that by, you know, you're going to have to take back the control of the Congress and the Senate in order to pass these bills.
No, you wouldn't.
No, you
wouldn't. They are going to expire. Those tax cuts for the wealthy, for the corporations, will expire. They need a way to implement them, to extend them, if Republicans wish to see them extended. Otherwise, they end. And you're talking about trillions of dollars. In fact, over $1 trillion was given away from people who are not wealthy, given to the wealthy and the corporations in those Trump tax cuts that are set to expire.
Well, back before Reagan was president,
the
taxes on the corporations was, or the wealthy 1%, was almost 99%.
Not
now
really.
It's down to like 25%.
Yeah, it was not ever actually a 99% under Ronald Reagan. It was under Eisenhower, but yeah.
It was up there. It was like, you know,
it was the marginal tax rate that nobody ever paid
to reinvest in their companies.
They
just give stock buybacks and dividends to their shareholders.
Right. So you're in favor of raising the taxes on those corporations, correct?
Correct.
Okay, good.
But once you do that, all those corporations are going to, like Elon, they're going to ship all their jobs to Mexico and China and Philippines
No, because they'll be punished for doing that as well. That's the lesson that we clearly learned during the pandemic. That's why Joe Biden has brought the jobs back here. That's why there's incentives for, you know, the electric cars to be produced here. So, I mean, a lot of the concerns you have are completely legitimate concerns, but it sounds like maybe you haven't been paying attention to what has been going on over the past 4 years and the extraordinary amount of legislation that has been passed to do those things, Hal.
Tesla, you know, the demand for the Teslas and electric cars are diminishing. because people are realizing their limitations.
That's not true.
They don't hold a charge when they're cold.
Hal, these things are not true. So I need to turn him down for a bit because he doesn't want it. So, Hal, I need you to have a conversation here, which means you don't talk over me, and I'll try to not talk over you. But what you just gave was a whole bunch of bad information. In fact, sales of electric cars were higher this year than they have ever been in the history of this country. Now, the rate of increase in the sales of electric cars has begun to slow. The rate of sales for Tesla has plummeted because folks have realized that the guy who runs it, Elon Musk, is, you know, kind of a right-wing Nazi, and they don't want to buy his cars. But as far as the information that nobody wants electric cars, electric car sales in California alone, one out of every five new cars sold is now an EV. So that's just not accurate information. The idea that sales are plummeting is not true. They're increasing.
3 years in advance.
What?
You know, back before a lot of this information came to light about their limitations, especially when it got frozen in Michigan, is now they're realizing,
this stuff is not viable. Yeah, I appreciate the call, Hal, but you're either making up information or you're just knowingly sharing disinformation, and we don't need to do that here on the broadcast. There's plenty of other hours in the broadcast day for stuff and nonsense, not on my show. 818-985-KPFK, 818-985-5735. Let me go to Larry in San Pedro. Hey, Larry, welcome to the broadcast, sir.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Great. Brad, comment, if you would, on Trump's remarks Friday night to Christians, and comment on the Axios poll that says that Ms. Harris is 20 points ahead among young people. I'll take my call off the air. Gracias, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you. Well, as far as the poll that says she's 20 points ahead for young people, I think it was like 60-40, something like that. That's not altogether surprising in that Democrats are always going to do better with young people. I had some poll numbers that I was hoping to go through here, but we got a lot of people calling, so I'm going to put those off to another day. Suffice to say, the poll numbers that are coming out for Kamala Harris are quite encouraging, and they are all moving in the direction of her and the Democratic Party and, well, frankly, democracy, which is my interest. As far as Donald Trump's comments that you're asking about, let me go ahead and play. This was a rally from, I think, from Florida over the weekend that has freaked a lot of people out.
And again, Christians, get out and vote just this time. You won't have to do it anymore. Four more years. You know what? It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you. Get out. You got to get out and vote. In 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed so good you're not going to have to vote.
So, a lot of people are freaking out about that comment. He's saying that in 4 years, there won't be any more voting. We'll fix everything so that we won't have democracy anymore. We won't be able to vote. We won't be able to vote. And I suspect that's what he would like to do if he comes in. But I don't think that's what he was saying. Now, you may call me naive. I think he was saying, look, vote for me for 4 years so I can stay out of jail. And then I don't give a damn if you ever vote again because I'll be term limited and that'll be the end. Just make sure you help me stay out of jail for the next 4 years. After that, I don't care if you vote again because I don't care about anybody else. I don't care about my party. I don't care about the House or the Senate. All I care about is me. That's what I heard. And I know a lot of people didn't. A lot of people are freaking out about what he said, that, you won't have to vote in four more years because we'll have it all fixed, as if he's talking about the voting system. Maybe that is what he's talking about. That was not the sense that I personally got. your mileage may vary, particularly if you're driving one of those very, very cold EVs. 818-985-5735. Let me go to Don in Los Angeles. Hey, Don, welcome to the broadcast, sir. Oh, Don, do we have Don?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yeah, go ahead, Don.
Yeah, that guy Hal that just called, I think we Democrats need to talk up New Deal economics and Keynesian economics, because they don't understand, and most of us don't understand, why they had top marginal rates back in the 50s and 60s up to 91%. Mm-hmm. It was actually to grow the economy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they don't understand. Most people made that kind of money were business people.
Mm-hmm.
And so are you going to either give that money to the government, or are you going to plow it back into your business, which kind of forced them to expand their business to grow the economy?
Mm-hmm.
And it worked like a charm until Reagan came along, who made his money from acting, and he hated and resented it, you know. And so he wanted to eliminate it, and that's how this whole argument began, along with a lot of other lies. And the libertarian mind would never understand that in a million years, because they think that, you know, tax cuts stimulates economic growth. And I remember Randy Rhodes once explained it so well. If you're a businessman and they're giving you tax refunds or cuts,
mm-hmm.
you're not going to hire more people with that money. You're not, you know, the job creator. You're in business to make money.
Yep.
And labor is your biggest cost. And so you're going to salt it away in a bank account and actually take it out of circulation. The only way you can get a guy to hire more people is if you stimulate through demand side activity.
Yeah.
Or policies in order to get the economy going, and then they're worried of missing out on the uptick. You know?
Thanks, Don. Yeah, and I think that the caller might have agreed with you on half of those points, but I think he was quite confused by a lot of them. He sounded to me like a person who was getting a lot of disinformation in his ears and having trouble processing it, or maybe on his eyes on Twitter. I don't know. But I do appreciate the call. Thanks, Don. 818-985-KPFK. Let me go to Carlos in Thousand Oaks. Hey, Carlos, welcome to the broadcast.
Hello, Brad. Yes, I'd like to remind everybody that in 2016, there was a little Chiron that ran underneath on Bloomberg that said Mossack Fonseca holding $31 trillion in assets in tax avoidance firms, one of 200 in tax avoidance firms. And funny, we were $31 trillion was our national debt, and also those are the same people. Mossack Fonseca was established by the Republicans to go after Jimmy Carter. They were doing the Iran-Contra stuff out of Mossack Fonseca, and the gentleman before me, I think, was 100% correct when it comes to taxation. You're supposed to tax people to actually get them to spend money in our economy.
Thanks.
To hold it.
Thanks, Carlos. I appreciate that call, even if I couldn't really understand about half of it. That was me, though, not your fault. Let me go to Mark in Long Beach. Hey, Mark, welcome to the broadcast. I've got just a minute or two here, so if you can be brief, it is greatly appreciated.
Okay, yeah, I'm getting, with all these positive polls, I'm reminded of 2016 when, as the election approached the last few days and a week, so you get a lot of news things saying, oh, Hillary's got it made. Hillary's going to get, you know.
Yep.
And I think that might have been put out by the other side so that voters would stay home.
Mm.
And I believe that worked. But if you know, you go back and read the old papers, every day there was something like, oh, it's a breeze for Hillary. That's what I think.
Well, and I think that a lot of people did not take that seriously. They felt that for whatever reason, whether it was nefarious or not, they felt for whatever reason that, oh, she was going to win. And we were on this program warning people, not that she would lose, but no, it was not in the bag, as so many of them thought. So I will be pressing people, I guarantee you, over the next, well, now 99 days, to take nothing for granted. Nothing.
That's right.
Get out there, vote, and tell everyone you know to vote and everything else. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. Quick thing. He's calling her lying Kamala now.
Yeah.
But it sounds a lot like lion Kamala. It'd be a nice political cartoon to draw up.
There you
okay,
go.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Well done. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. Let me go to, do I have time? Roger's going to have to be really fast. He's calling from Minneapolis. Roger, welcome back to the broadcast. I can only give you about 30 seconds, and I know sometimes you'd need more. Sorry about that.
I will channel my inner Morris.
Thank you. Who's standing by the way. So hurry, Roger.
KPFK has no room for American Petroleum Institute trolls. I've been driving an electric car in Minnesota for 7 years, and they work fine in the winter. Thank you very much. Kamala's profile is growing magnificently. Kamala the lioness. Oh, yes. And as far as vice president goes, I hate to be a typical triangulator, but we're going to need somebody who checks off boxes that she doesn't. So it needs to be a pasty white guy, sort of moderate. I'm sorry to say it, but that's how I see it.
That's okay. Roger for vice president. Thank you, sir. I'm glad you're able to. I'm glad you're able to keep that EV moving in that cold throughout those cold Wisconsin winters. All right, we do have time. Yeah, he mentioned Morris. And Morris is standing by. Mo from Long Beach. Mo, I haven't talked to you in seems like forever. Welcome back to the broadcast, my friend.
I still love you, man. Let me tell you something. Kamala Harris has rejuvenated. She has rejuvenated. She has reinvigorated. She has re-energized American politics. She now owns the news cycle. Listen, two-thirds of the new donors are people that never gave no money before. The Gen Z people, I guess that's what you call them, they was going to stay at home. They coming out the woodworks now. She got 170,000 volunteers. Ain't nobody, I ain't seen that. She got more money than LeBron James got in 1 week. Go online and listen to Kamala Harris do her interview with Brett Kavanaugh. And then ask yourself, how the heck did he get on the Supreme Court? Behave yourselves. Thank you, Brett.
Love you, Mo. Thanks for calling in. Boy, it's been too long since we heard from old Mo. We've got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, to my board operator, Wendell Handy, and to all of you folks who called in and folks who did not, folks who listened. It is greatly appreciated. Thank you for spending a portion of your day with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it anytime for free at bradblog.com. And you can drop me an email. I am bradcast@bradblog.com on the Facebooks, Mastodons, and sites still known as Twitter. I am the Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
Listening to the broadcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.